This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy.
Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them, and guess what? That's normal. Regain offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online.
Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both.
See why people wish they'd try couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
Hey family, this is Ken Caruso, the Black History Buff. Come, let's walk and talk. Before we get started today, I want to give a quick shout out to T. Lewis, who caught last week's keyword betrayal. You get your shout out right here. This week, we're switching to email for Patreon access, so listen out for today's word. In July 2025, Sean P. Diddy Combs was convicted on federal charges under something called the Mann Act. Now, I'm going to be really honest with you. Diddy's case leaves me conflicted. This man has a documented history of abuse, especially his domestic violence against singer Cassie Ventura. He should face consequences for that. But using the Mann Act to get him? It feels like prosecutors couldn't nail him for what he actually did wrong, so they reached for whatever they could make stick. And that puts us in a difficult position. We want accountability, especially for harm done to black women like Cassie. But when the law gets twisted to secure a conviction, even against someone who deserves consequences, it sets a dangerous precedent. What caught my attention is that Diddy was convicted under the same 1910 law that was used to destroy one of the greatest athletes of all time, Jack Johnson, the first black heavyweight boxing champion. Every day, I bring you stories on YouTube, my podcast, and social media that connect today's news to our history. Today's story is about how that same federal law was weaponized over a century ago to destroy a black man whose only real crime was being too successful, too bold, and too unapologetic about it. So first, let me quickly break down what happened with Diddy. In July 2025, federal prosecutors convicted him on two counts under the Mann Act. That's transporting people across state lines for prostitution. They couldn't get him on bigger charges like racketeering, but the Mann Act stuck. He's facing 4 to 5 years when he gets sentenced in October 2025. Now, here's what's fascinating about this law. The Mann Act was passed in 1910 during what historians call a moral panic about something called white slavery. Politicians and reformers claimed there was this massive criminal network destroying the lives of innocent white women, that criminal organizations were trafficking white women across state lines for prostitution. Except here's the thing, it was basically all made up. After extensive federal investigations, the government never found evidence that this massive trafficking network actually existed. But the panic was real, and it was useful. You see, 1910 was during the progressive era. Massive immigration was changing America. Women were entering the workforce, social norms were starting to shift, and some people did not like these changes. So they created this law with deliberately vague language, transporting anyone across state lines for, air quotes, immoral purposes. The Mann Act wasn't really about stopping trafficking. It was about giving federal prosecutors a weapon, a tool to use against anyone who challenged social hierarchies or moral norms. And by 1910, there was already someone who'd been driving white America absolutely crazy for 2 whole years. Let me tell you about Jack Johnson, because you need to understand who this person was to understand why they went after him so hard. Born in Galveston, Texas in 1878, Johnson was the son of former enslaved people. His father, Henry, was a janitor. His mother, Tina, did laundry for white families. But from early on, he was different. While other children learned to keep their heads down and say, yes, sir, no, sir, Jack Johnson walked around like he owned the world. He started boxing as a teenager, fighting in back alley matches for nickels and dimes. And in 1908, 2 years before the Mann Act was even passed, Johnson became the first black heavyweight boxing champion. He had been driving white America absolutely insane. As far as they were concerned, the man was a menace. Johnson drove the fastest cars money could buy, and he drove them fast, racing through city streets at speeds that terrified police. He wore custom-tailored suits that cost more than most people made in a year. He owned nightclubs, he flashed diamonds, he tipped waiters with $100 bills just to see the look on their faces. But it wasn't just the money that enraged white people. It was his attitude. Johnson would smile that gold-toothed grin right in their faces. He'd walk into white establishments like he belonged there. When white fighters tried to intimidate him before matches, he'd laugh at them. During fights, he'd actually talk to the audience, cracking jokes while he was beating their champion senseless. And then there were his relationships. Johnson dated and eventually married white women, openly and proudly. His first wife, Etta Durea, was a white socialite from Philadelphia. When she died by suicide in 1912, Johnson was devastated, but it didn't change him. He kept living exactly as he wanted to live. Johnson understood something that terrified white America. He knew he was their equal, and he wasn't going to pretend otherwise. In 1910, that kind of confidence in a black man was seen as dangerous as dynamite. And then came the fight that changed everything.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy.
Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them. And guess what? That's normal.
Regain offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online. Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both.
See why people wish they'd try couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
White America couldn't stand seeing a black man as heavyweight champion. So they launched the Great White Hope campaign, a desperate search for any fighter who could put Johnson back in his place. And they found Jim Jeffries, the former undefeated heavyweight champion who had retired years earlier. The press built this fight into more than a boxing match. This was a referendum on racial superiority. Jeffries came out of retirement specifically to prove white supremacy in the ring. The fight was scheduled for July 4th, 1910, Independence Day. Just take a minute and think about the symbolism there. When Johnson destroyed Jeffries, and I mean destroyed, he toyed with him, he talked to the crowd whilst he systematically dismantled the Great White Hope, white America lost its mind. Race riots broke out across the country. At least 19 people died, most of them black people who were attacked by white mobs angry that a black man had proven his superiority over their champion. This was 1910, just 45 years after slavery officially ended. Jim Crow laws were in full effect. Black people were supposed to stay in their place, keep their head down and say, yes sir, no sir. And here came Jack Johnson, walking around like he owned the world. because in the boxing ring, he basically did. So, the white establishment had a problem. They couldn't beat Johnson in the ring. They couldn't intimidate him. They couldn't make him disappear. But then something beautiful happened for them. Congress had just passed the Mann Act that same year, 1910. This vague new federal law was the perfect weapon they'd been waiting for. And here's how they used it. Federal prosecutors went hunting through Johnson's personal life, looking for anything they could twist and warp into a federal crime. They found that Johnson had been in a relationship with a white woman named Belle Schreiber, and that sometimes they had traveled across state lines together. Under the Mann Act, transporting someone across state lines for immoral purposes was a federal crime. And who decided what was immoral? Yes, the same all-white juries who thought a black man dating a white woman was the height of immorality. The federal prosecution of Jack Johnson was openly, explicitly racist. The assistant US attorney, Harry Parkin, literally said in court, "This Negro, in the eyes of many, has been persecuted. Perhaps as an individual he was, but it was his misfortune to be the foremost example of the evil in permitting the intermarriage of whites and blacks." Think about that for a second. The prosecutor admitted Johnson was being persecuted as an individual, but it said it was necessary to send a message about interracial relationships. They were using the courts to enforce white supremacy, plain and simple. Johnson was later tried by Kennesaw Mountain Landis, and that name's important because Landis went on to become baseball commissioner and kept baseball segregated for decades. The jury was all white, of course, and on May 13th, 1913, they convicted Johnson on all counts in less than 2 hours. Hey family, I hope you're enjoying the episode so far. Yes, this is an ad, but it's an ad for me. I forgot to mention at the start of the episode that along with Patreon, I also have a newsletter that you can join for free. Isn't it refreshing to get an ad for free stuff for once? The newsletter is something I set up to keep in touch with like-minded people who don't love being glued to apps, but still want to keep up to date with what's going on through the good old written word, you know, like our ancestors did back in the 90s. You can find a link to join in the description. Okay, I'm out. Thanks for sticking around. I appreciate you, and please enjoy the rest of the show. Johnson knew this was coming. Before the trial even ended, he fled to Canada and spent 7 years in exile, wandering through Europe and South America. 7 years. Think about what that means for a man like Johnson. This was someone who loved being the center of attention, who thrived on the roar of the crowd. In exile, he fought exhibition matches in third-rate venues for a fraction of what he could have earned at home. He performed in vaudeville shows, sometimes reduced to being a novelty act just to pay the bills. The man who had been the most famous athlete in America was now hustling for survival in foreign countries. He lived in London, Paris, Mexico City, and Buenos Aires, always looking over his shoulder, never able to settle down. His boxing skills over time deteriorated because he didn't have the proper training facilities or worthy opponents. The government had achieved its goal. They'd made an example of what happens when a black man gets too successful, too visible, and too unapologetic. When Johnson finally returned to the United States in 1920, he was a different man, still proud, still defiant, but worn down by years of exile. He served about 10 months in federal prison at Leavenworth, and by then, his boxing career was done. The prime years of his athletic life had been stolen by federal prosecutors who couldn't stand the sight of a black man who refused to know his place. The contrast between Diddy's case and Johnson's shows us something important, but it's complicated. With Diddy, there is documented evidence of harm, especially, as far as I'm concerned, to a black woman like Cassie. But using the Mann Act feels like overreach when they couldn't get him on the actual crimes he'd committed. But Johnson's case was pure persecution. Johnson's only crime was being a successful black man who refused to play by white supremacy's rules. With Diddy, the situation is a whole lot messier. Sometimes knowing the difference between justice and persecution isn't as clear-cut as we'd like it to be. Now, Johnson wasn't the only one. The Mann Act was used against other successful black men throughout history. For example, Chuck Berry got hit with it in 1958. The law kept getting used whenever federal prosecutors wanted a tool to go after black celebrities, black men who stepped out of line. But here's what's important to understand. Jack Johnson's persecution was part of a broader campaign to put black success back in its place during the Jim Crow era. It wasn't about law and order. It was about racial control. The Mann Act is still on the books today. With Diddy, it secured a conviction against someone who has clearly committed crimes. Just not necessarily the crimes he was convicted for. That's what makes this whole situation so messy and conflicted. But we can't forget how the same law was weaponized against Jack Johnson. Not because he was a criminal, but because he was a black man who refused to know his place. Johnson finally got a presidential pardon in 2018, 150 years after his conviction, by President Trump, no less, who called it racially motivated injustice. And for once, he was absolutely mind-bogglingly correct. I know, right? It just gets crazier the more you look into this. Look, history is made every day, family. Sometimes that history is about justice being served. Sometimes it's about justice being perverted for racist ends. And sometimes, like with the Diddy case, it's a whole lot messier than we'd like. Where accountability and prosecutorial overreach get tangled up together. Our job is to know the difference, even when that difference isn't easy to see. Okay, that's it from me. You've been listening to King Caruso from the Black History Buff podcast. The past shapes the present, and understanding that history helps us make sense of today's news. Family, until next time, please stay blessed. Hey, you stay till the end credits like only the smartest of people do. Listen, if you stuck around this long, you sound like the kind of person who might really enjoy my Patreon. Over there, you'll get access to hundreds of ad-free posts, early access to videos and recordings, bonus content, and whatever else I can think of to add value to your life. And you can join for free. Plus, if you join a paid tier, you'll get your name in the end credits of videos and that warm, fuzzy feeling of knowing that you're helping me make the show bigger and better. You can find me by searching for Black History Buff on Patreon or by using the link in the description. That's it. I'm done. Thank you so much for staying with me, and I hope you'll stick around for more episodes and share them with your friends. Till next time, stay blessed.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy.
Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them, and guess what? That's normal.
Regain, powered by BetterHelp, offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online. Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both. See why people wish they'd tried couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.